is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
I welcome Brenda Schaefer and her colleagues, Alan Howard and Daniel Nussbaum. Together, they are the authors of a new volume of A World That We're Living In Now, Energy and Challenge, Geopolitical Challenge. It's entitled Operational Energy. Therein lies the mystery. What is operational energy, and why is it suddenly so current at the DOD, at the Department of Energy in Washington, and we can presume in capitals around the world, including those of our adversaries? I welcome, helping me with this story, Brenda Schaefer of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy and of the Naval Postgraduate School. I also welcome Dr. Daniel Nussbaum, chair of the Energy Academic Group at the Naval Postgraduate School, and his colleague Alan Howard, associate chair, Energy Academic Group. Gentlemen and Brenda, a very good evening to you. Thank you. Dan, I know to come to you right away to ask a question. Why does this book exist? What's happened? Why now? Good evening to you, Dan.
Yes. If you'll permit me to do a very quick thumbnail on who we are. Inside the Navy, unbelievably, there's a fully accredited graduate school called the Naval Postgraduate School, just like a university with physics and mechanical engineering and so on, and cross-cutting organizations like the Energy Academic Group. So we do curricula, we put together curricula, we do research, and we do outreach. That's sort of the background of who we are. Energy is important, but it's not like physics, mechanical engineering, and so on, with a fully accepted set of intellectual capital. We looked around and we noticed some things that were missing, and Alan can pick up that part of the story about what was missing.
Alan, greetings to you. This book now, the question is, are we under attack? Did we do something wrong? What did you find when you looked around about energy and especially the military? Good evening to you, Alan.
Good evening. Thanks, John. What we found, I mean, we Dan and I were working in energy. Along the way, we came across Brenda. We created this great team to come up with this book. But when we were looking out there at operational energy and what that means to the military, I mean, the bottom line is the military simply cannot operate without energy. And that's becoming increasingly important. We need more and more energy to do the things that we do for the military to operate. And I know we're maybe going to get into the distinction between OE, operational energy, and what that is. But we realized that there was no sort of comprehensive book or textbook or resource out there on this subject. And so the three of us came together to put that out. And this is sort of our first draft, our first ideas on what does operational energy mean. It's a huge and broad subject area, as I said, extremely important. And I think the world, recent world events are just reinforcing why this is so important. I think we'll get into that a little bit more here, hopefully in this conversation. But yeah, this is why we came up with the book. Nothing was brought together in one place. And so we think this is a really important first step on informing the military across the DOD, the folks we hope will read this book and use it in classrooms, so that the future military leaders understand and have an appreciation of the elements of energy and how that impacts military operations.
The book is presented as an educational textbook, and there are quizzes at the end of each chapter, and it identifies the issues. Brenda, operational energy, OE, I love the acronyms of the Pentagon. They wake me up in the morning. And IE, institutional energy. OE and IE, what are the definitions? What's the distinction, Brenda?
So OE, operational energy, means the energy needed for the military to conduct its operations. IE, installation energy, is for the stable installations. But that the border between operational energy and installation energy is getting quite blurred. One, the United States, a lot of its operations, even abroad, are being operated from installations in the United States. Today, most of the military's energy supplies operate on civilian supply lines. And three, we're in an era of increased hybrid warfare, where our adversaries are going to target our energy supplies, both military and civilian, as part of their warfare. And as we point out in the book, Russia, Iran, and China already are studying our American energy vulnerabilities, both civilian and explicit military. And as part of their way to overcome any kind of, you know, explicit military disadvantages, compared to the United States, they're going to target our and disrupt our energy infrastructure and supply. So can you imagine, you know, we're supporting Ukraine in a war. Suddenly, Russia starts disruption of electricity supplies at, you know, mass events like Super Bowl games, you know, baseball games, Taylor Swift concerts. And this could really hurt the will of America to continue to support operations abroad. So we really need to think about these issues.
I enjoy the history, Dan. What is energy transition? Why is that important to identify? And give me an example, please.
So I want to pick up what Brenda said. About 80% by traditional metrics of our energy is spent on operations, ships, aircraft, vehicles, generator sets, and foreign and forward operating bases. And 20% is at the installations where I sit if you go onto a base. But as Brenda says, it's being blurred. And we've gone through transitions in energy before when Churchill said, we're not going to stoke our ships with coal. We're going to use oil. Boy, it caused a big flap. Or when you go from sail to coal, or when you go from manned aircraft to unmanned aircraft, these are big, big transitions. There is a chatter now about transitioning into less fossil fuel and more electricity. I would say it's problematic. It's yet to be proven. But all these are very real transitions of what powers your military. The constant is you have to power the military. Nothing happens without that energy.
Yes, Alan, let's go to one energy transition that's very romantic. It's the idea of introducing nuclear power inside a submarine. One man, Admiral Rickover, had the genius idea, the vision, and he put it inside a submarine called Nautilus, 1954. That defines a new age in the U.S. Navy. Did the Navy make that transition easily, or was it a struggle to your reading, Alan?
Well, of course it was a struggle. I mean, as Dan said, anytime you make a major shift like that, that's a tough thing to do. But this has absolutely been one of the redefining, transitions for the Navy. And, you know, our carriers and our submarines are all nuclear operated. The other support surface vessels operate primarily on fossil fuels, diesel. And so that has created, I mean, we have real challenges around that because the nuclear carriers are relatively self-sustaining. I mean, of course, you have to provide liquid fuels for the aircraft that fly off the carriers, for the helicopters, and then food for the sailors on board. But other than that, I mean, the carrier could, in effect, just continue on without resupply of fuel as long as it wants to go. And same with the nuclear submarines. That's been really, really a major shift and a major strategic advantage for us. The U.S. Navy operates something called what we call a blue water Navy, which means we are one of the very few nations in the world that can operate anywhere on the globe. That, as I said, creates very challenging resupply issues, some of which we address here in the book. But yeah, nuclear transition was massive. In fact, I'll tell you, we're even now looking at, from a military perspective, we're looking at how to bring nuclear to the battlefield. And that's going to bring a whole new shift in thinking. We're looking at something called micro reactors, which is containerized nuclear that, you know, 2 20-foot containers, you can ship them out to a forward operating base and have those up and running within a few days, powering all sorts of things like all of the housing units, lighting, air conditioning, food. You could even power electric vehicles and things like that in the forward operating environment. That's going to be a massive, massive shift because I think we also mentioned here in the book the losses that we took on in Afghanistan as an example. These constant fuel convoys, they're huge, juicy targets for the adversary and very predictable because we were using so much fuel and diesel powered generators at our forward operating bases. And this could completely shift that paradigm.
The book is Operational Energy. Alan Howard, Daniel Nussbaum, and Brenda Schaefer, the authors. When we come back, right now, a case study of energy. You've heard it as a war, but it's actually a story about energy war. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.